This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytech, brings you Blowing Bubbles. Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world. How are people living their bubble lives? Working from home, keeping kids entertained, and staying connected and getting exercise. And how are these things presenting us with the opportunities to find new ways of living? Every weekday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann, Shan Gallagher, and Mara Karatai reach out from their bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world. Broadcast on Otago Access Radio 105.4 FM and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz and sustainablelens.org, bringing connection, joy, kindness and peace in the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces, around the world. I'm Samuel Mann. I'm at Otago Polytechnic Te Pūkenga today. And I am with Jean Ross.
Hello.
Welcome back, Jean.
Thank you, Sam.
I say welcome back because you've been on a big trip.
I have. 6 weeks, Sam. Went to Paris to a conference where I presented. And then to Zurich. Invitation to the University of Zurich. The nursing department, where I met a few people, and then over to London, picked up the car, went to visit two community development communities, projects that we've been working with, one in Bishop's Castle, medieval village on the Welsh-English border, of a almost 4 or 5 years of a relationship that's been built up there, and we've worked with them solidly for 3 years, 2020 to 2022. And what was wonderful is that the chairman of the community invited all the core stakeholders that I'd originally worked with over the 3 years and to the pub, and they all came. And we had a lovely evening, and they were so interested in what the students were doing and the potential that they've achieved for them. And they were just so interested, Sam. But the one thing that was happening there was that, as you know, we were presenting that community at the Royal Geographical Society, which I presented on our behalf in the end of August in London. And it was about that community, the work that we'd achieved with them, with the students and ourselves, but also it was about community pride. And together we presented a virtual presentation, but I was there personally, which has some benefits, but because it meant that Keith was part of it, who is part of our collaboration, and Keith is the chairperson of the Bishop's Castle Community Development. And you had a great idea of including Hope's poem that she wrote, Young Lady from Bishop's Castle, which we published in one of the Scope journals. And Keith is a musician, and his music, and that's how we started the presentation. And what was really interesting, the focus of that whole afternoon, 1 till 6 o'clock, was about pride, and generally community pride. And it was a dynamic, and there was a vast range of topics there. And I went last, and I purposely wanted to go last, because I could see the themes that were building up was about pride, and the different researchers looking for pride. And I wanted to go last because the one thing that stood as a part was that we never went out looking for pride. Pride came to us. And that's how I started the presentation. Pride actually oozed from the community. And that was reiterated by meeting everybody up in the community again 4 years later. So that was that community development project, and we'll always have a relationship with them. And I would think that, you know, another 2 to 3 years, we can go back and we can do some reflections on what we've achieved there with the community. And then on to Holyhead, where I had originally discussed with Alan Roberts, who is a lead in the community development for Holyhead in 2019. But because of COVID and so forth, we put that on hold. And yes, the community is still very interested in us working with them over the next 2 to 3 years. So we will start a community development project with the student nurses in February 2024. And what I can see as a link already is this notion of pride and some ideas that I had. So when I actually was at the conference, which is the RGS conference, that was the last conference I attended, I was getting some great ideas from people. And, you know, Sam, I hadn't been to a conference for 3-4 years because of COVID and so forth. But the actually meeting people face-to-face at a conference from a wide variety of geographers and non-geographers and was substantial, was amazing. And I have a list of people that knew one person that knew somebody else and told me about a number of developments that have happened in Holyhead, filmmakers from all around Wales who are really looking at Holyhead as this centre of pride in a very high poverty area. And I have a number of people to connect with to help the students next year understand a community that is, you know, the other side of the world, about health inequity, disparity and poverty in an environment that's got a significant historical makeup, which develops, I think, significant pride for that community. So that was fantastic, and it was wonderful meeting up with old colleagues again. And then I visited Windsor, where I presented at another conference, which was Nurses Designer. And that was a very stimulating conference in that it was an international one on nursing science, and there were some very, very interesting concepts from around the world that were presented at that conference. Not a very big conference, but there was a like-mindedness, a bit like the RGS conference, there's a like-mindedness. And the nursing science was that we were all scientists with the basis within nursing and coming at it with different perspectives. Yes, so Sam, really, 3 conferences and 2 community development projects and 1 invitation to University of Zurich.
Lots to step through, but first, let's take Adishat, Time Makes the Wine.
Send me free. I can't get away so far when you take the key. to keep a young girl off the knees.
Jane, I want to talk through some of those conferences and things. We're not going to get through all of them. But first, you described yourself there as both a geographer and a nurse. How does that work?
Yeah, interesting. And I absolutely can say I sit in the parallel position between nursing as a discipline, which was my initial career drive, of which I still am a registered nurse, and geography, social geography. It happened by default, you know. One person said, oh, you need to talk to this person, when I was putting my proposal for my PhD together. And it just happened that I spoke to a person who was a social geographer with an interest in rural and an interest in identity. And my focus for my PhD was, where did the identity, or how did the identity of the rural nurse develop in the 1990s? Before that, there was no concept of rural nurse in New Zealand. There was other terms, but there was no concept, rural nurse. And in the 1990s, that's when nurses got together who practiced in rural contexts, and they said, we are different to urban nurses, and we need to identify ourselves as being different. And they started calling themselves rural nurse specialists or rural nurses. And that concept eventuated in New Zealand as a normal discourse. And so I was interested in how that identity came about, and that's my PhD. And by default, it sat within rural as context because of the term rural nurse, and social implications that have come from that. And Dr. Ruth Pennelly was my initial PhD supervisor, and her interest was rural and identity. And that's how I ended up in enrolling in the PhD with the University of Otago in geography.
So I would imagine that a rural nurse does all of the things. Is that the difference, that a rural nurse doesn't specialise as much?
The rural nurse is specialised in rural nursing, which means that their scope of practice is broad. It's from life to death, everything in between. It is public health. It is looking after people in their own home. It's looking after children. It's looking after emergencies, after-hours care. It is about health promotion. It is about fundamentally understanding and working alongside with that community that they are serving. Those in the 90s and early 2000s, rural nursing was all of that. But since then, it's become a little bit more specialised in nurses sometimes call themselves prime nurses. They work in urban areas and they work on call at weekends in rural areas. So that is a little bit of a difference that has happened. And I think what the identity of that rule in the rural nurse in the 90s and 2000s was a particular practitioner. Things have changed since then, and that could be due to funding different models. It's due to different perspectives. It's due to different education. But also, nurses today don't necessarily want to be that full-on practitioner of the 1990s. They were trailblazers. They were pioneers. And things have changed since then. And society's changed since then as well. And legislation and regulation has changed since then about nursing and nursing practice. In the 1990s, there was no scope of practice. You were a registered nurse. You now have a scope of practice. Your annual practicing certificate is about what you can practice so it's a lot more focused. In the 1990s there was no specific education, a postgraduate education. It has now become a postgraduate education, and around that is viewing what you can and cannot do. For example, standing orders and all the rest of it. So it is, 30 years on, it's different.
So are public health and community health, are they specialties or are they perspectives on doing health, doing nursing?
Yeah, public health is a speciality and always has been a speciality. And it still sits within the domain of public health, medical officer of health, nurses work as public health nurses, in that particular field. For myself, community nursing, you cannot be a community practitioner without have a public health focus. But that doesn't mean you're a public health practitioner and you come under the medical officer of health, which public health nurses still do today, but you can take the principles of public health and include them and work within those as a community practitioner, which means that you work alongside and with the community in partnership, in collaboration with the people of that community. And that community, although there are core elements, let's say, to rural communities, there are also differences between them as well. And that's an element, that's what I identified from my PhD, was that nurses who practice within rural contexts, it's three-tiered. There is the normal legislation regulation of a registered nurse, which all nurses need to adhere to. Then there is this transitional focus that I called the nurse practicing rural contexts, but on the fringe, on the edge. Whether that they move into being engrossed and encapsulated by that rural community and understanding how that community functions, and that's what I call rural culture. And there's this 2-year window in that transitional period, whether you stay and you move significantly into the third tier, which is you are embraced and engrossed within that rural culture, or you move back into the traditional aspects of nursing, where we all start within a legislated, regulated scope of practice. Because to actually be a functioning, registered rural nurse, you have to take into consideration the people, the culture, how it functions, the economics, how the community actually works, from an economic perspective to a recreation, to tourism, to the insiders, the outsiders, the visitors. It becomes part of your everyday practice.
Would you argue that even the most technical area of nursing, say a theatre nurse, do they have to have that understanding of that public health perspective, you call it?
Well, it's not a norm.
Would you like them to?
I think it would be beneficial for all nurses, i.e. let's say nurse learners now, to take that public health approach to their practice, and not call themselves a theatre nurse, but a practitioner. And their practice includes a technical, skillful public health, health promotion, effective communicator, evidence-based practitioner, and sustainability. And that means that they, if there was five or six aspects, that, and I believe there is five or six main aspects to a practitioner, nurse, and I'm not talking about nurse practitioner, I'm talking about practicing as a nurse, that are fundamental to your practice every day, and is a framework for our practice, then I do believe that movements such as sustainability would become a norm in practice, which is about public health, health promotion, and wanting to improve aspects of practice, which does take into consideration economics.
I've been arguing that nursing has got an easier job of incorporating sustainability because every nurse has got at their core the ethic of care. And computing doesn't have the equivalent. Do you think I'm crazy? Well, maybe you do anyway, but about this.
Well, I can't argue about the computing, okay? But what I can say is, you know, my perspective is that nurses are sustainable practitioners. What does that mean? It means that an ethic of care is an ethic of care of an individual, a family whānau, a community, nationally and internationally. And we know that nurses are well known to take a global perspective on health. Not all nurses do. And is that because we have focused more in a biomedical model, where we've become reductionist? And I think that might be the case. And I think if we all wanted to take a framework of sustainability, we have to discuss with employers what our practice is. And does that mean that it does take all these elements? Are we shortchanging both community and the citizens locally and nationally and internationally because of a reductionist model? And I think maybe we are.
because all nurses at Otago Polytechnic, Te Pūkenga, this week, go through your CHASE project.
Yes, 3rd years.
The third years. So in their career, they will have, in their education career, they will have all done a, what do you call it, a module?
A community development project, which is part of their primary healthcare / community clinical practice. Yes.
And we did some surveys last year on the graduates up to
2020.
Yeah, so 5 years into their careers, and asked them what they remembered about that.
Yes.
That project. And quite a lot of them did say at the start words to the effect of, I couldn't see how this related to my nursing practice.
Yes, exactly. You're absolutely right. And that's something that when we facilitate this community project with the learners, that is exactly what that's what they're thinking. And even though I talk to them about nursing is broad, it is about making a difference. It does take a public health approach. They still do. They still would say, I would prefer to be doing technical skills. And there is a bit of unpicking to do. But somewhere along those 120 hours, Sam, they have an aha moment. I would say 80% of them do. And that aha moment, they never forget, and that's exactly what our survey showed, that the aha moments, this makes sense now, I understand, I can make a difference to a broader and a bigger picture. And that's not to deflect from an individual one-on-one, but it is to say that nursing can make a significant difference to community health, to aggregates or groups of people, and be creative in that. And that's where I just mentioned earlier that I went to the Nursing Science conference and presented Nurse as Designer. And this was an example of nurses working in the capacity of developing health promotion resources and messages that actually have a design element to them and that are specific to that individual group or community that they're working with.
Bubble sprite of the forest of Orakanui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, nga mihi karahanui, kia koutou, ko Tahu aho. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars, in your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are, and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining and illuminating for you more and more each day. Who you are, the triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique and here, making things better. Thank you. Now I know that for us all, the last 1-3 years have been very tough. And it's so important that we give ourselves the time and the space that we need now to rest, to recalibrate, to recover, and to draw upon those new and those pre-existing skills that we have found ourselves constantly needing to use over the last several years. I know for myself, the living world is a constant comfort. And tomorrow I will be venturing forth to my heart's home workplace, Orokonui Eco Sanctuary, and showing one of my dear friends, Ali East, and her beautiful whānau all around the Eco Sanctuary. And this will be a great treat for me. And Ali East is an amazing, very creative genius goddess who has travelled the world several times over and is a dance professor and great performer and storyteller. And in her travels, she encourages students from all over the world to go and study traditional dances and to learn the ways and learn the rites and learn the life ways of those who have developed those traditional dances, and not only to admire and respect the dances, but also that long lineage of lives and stories and understanding that has informed all of those dances. And she encourages him to write poetry and do art and not only dance but also enshrine dance by conceptualizing its magic in so many different ways. So I have great admiration for her and I'm very excited to show her and her beautiful family around tomorrow. And of course, this got me thinking about how we are all tour guides in our lives and what a treat it is to be able to share those special aspects of our lives with those that we love and with everybody around us. What a treat it is to take on that role as a guide, as a tour guide, and share our knowledge, share our appreciation, share those points of connection that are different for everybody, and tell the stories that have underpinned and created the way that we live our life. I know for myself that recently I have undergone quite a personal transformation, and after years, in fact my whole life, of living with the open plan filing system and an abundance of treasure, I have released a great amount of treasure back to the universe and now live in an incredibly orderly and spacious and capacious mansion, which is very clean and tidy, and this is a whole new world for me. And what it has meant is that I take great joy in being a tour guide for my dear friends and those I love and those around me of my mansion, of my house, and having people come round is now a great pleasure and a great joy because they don't have to navigate the open plan filing system. So I really hope for you that you're finding ways within your life to enjoy those opportunities to share what is magic for you, what is meaningful for you. And whether it's taking a walk around a beautiful place that you love, as I will tomorrow at Orokonui Eco Sanctuary, or whether it is allowing an aspect of yourself to come forward and view your life in a whole new way, allowing a part of you to see how far you've come, sharing a part of yourself with someone you love dearly, allowing them to enjoy the beauty of your home, whatever it is that you want to share. I hope that you really enjoy being that tour guide and sharing your knowledge and your passion. And I want to say a huge thank you to Sam and the whole Blowing Bubbles team for having me, and I look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We're talking with Jean Ross. Jean, you're talking about the aha moment and that nursing can make a significant difference. Mm-hmm. And the role of creativity. Mm. And it's not just being able to do graphic design. In fact, it's not really that you're talking about at all, is it?
No.
So it's something about being creative, about problem solving, or what do you mean there?
Problem solving. But problem solving, and this is where I think this is quite exciting about the nurse or the nurse learner. They've identified an issue in collaboration with the community. They've researched that issue using evidence-based practice, but never losing sight of the community and the people that they're doing it for. So it's not broad brush. It's keeping dipping back in, keeping focused on the community, the context, and generally my practice is in rural, and the specific aspects of that community that makes that community the way it is, what it has and what it hasn't got. So it's assets driven. And so therefore identifying a health issue aligned with a community population, so you're not losing sight of that, evidence-based, which is broad, which is international, and then bringing all that information together back and feeding it together so that you come up with, and generally that's engaging with the Ottawa Charter, you coming up with what the community has, what it doesn't have in relation to this problem. And what it doesn't have feeds into the learner's ability to look critically at these almost five, what they don't have, and that together with the issue assists the learners as a group to be able to come up with a specific health promotion message, remember, that is related to that community only, and how that message can be shared, i.e. what kind of resource. And again, it's always related back to that community. It's related to the functioning of the community and the population of that community. And therefore, even though we've taken a broad perspective of a health issue, it comes back significantly as being related to that specific population and community and the assets that it has to be able to improve, potentially, the health, identified health issue. That is what we have come to understand is human-centered design. It's systems thinking. And it moves backwards and forwards. It's in collaboration with the community, related to the community. As we've learned, is related to design theory. And so we don't teach design. We don't teach about the double diamond. We don't teach about this. But by default, learners have a degree of creativity that assists them to be able to develop such a product or resource that is meaningful. And that is nursing. And I love the opportunity for nurses, the nurse learners, when they are become registered nurses a few months after they've created these resources as a team, to think that they've done something different. And I think it assists them, Sam, as practitioners later on.
Jim, we talked before about sustainability, and then you were talking just then about assets-driven approaches. I think we've talked about this before, but sustainability is challenging to teach if you front-load it with doom. If it's a, here's all everything that's wrong with the world, it's your responsibility to fix it. How do we move beyond a sort of a deficit model of here's everything that's wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Does the planetary health approach, is something like that the key? How do we present this as an opportunity for people to contribute to a thriving world?
Mm. That's very interesting, moving it from a doom and gloom, because I think that's why, you know, we've grappled with sustainability and climate change for so many years as nurses, and I'm not just talking nurses in New Zealand, I'm talking nurses internationally. It has been... a doom and gloom, and a doom and gloom of how do we get out of this? More the gloom than the doom. And when you get into, you know, that kind of a position, you're almost frozen. And I think nurses internationally, and there are a few, and their name keeps propping up all the time, are methodically going through this from one article that they've written to another, to putting out a challenge, and you know, myself and you know, two or three other colleagues in the late 2017-2018, we took on that challenge about sustainability and teaching it, to really kind of reflecting on, well, what does it mean, and trying to develop some kind of teaching focus within the Bachelor of Nursing curriculum that could be meaningful. And I don't think we got it right, because I think we were stuck in the doom and gloom, and how do you move yourself out of that? But we did have some idea, and that was to look retrospectively. And, you know, I've talked about this before, you know, Florence Nightingale, she was a sustainable environmentalist. as many other things that she was. And I think we can reflect on her practice and learn from that. And also understand that within the last hundred years, there's been a very reductionist biomedical model of practice for us all, and nurses have bought into that. And that has moved us away from Florence Nightingale's initial ideas of environmentalism, clean air, you know, sustainability, focus, evidence base. And I think we need to re-engineer her philosophy in an environment that has taken us through a biomedical model of a traditional, skills-based, technical, to a fundamental underpinning of nursing practice. And I think the CHASE model helps that, to be honest. I think it actually helps us focus on individual, aggregate groups, community, regional, national, and international perspectives.
You're talking about aha moments, so let's have Take On Me. About these students or the graduate nurses that we survey, and we started the story by saying that they say, what's this got to do with me? But by the end of the module, and now they're into 3 or 4 years, up to 5 years practice, the overwhelming response we got was the opposite of that. Now there's some response bias that we have to acknowledge possibly in that, but still there's people in literally with theatre nurses saying this CHASE thing totally changed my view of what nursing's about.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's working not just for the people who go off to be rural nurses, but for the rest of the nursing graduates as well, in terms of an understanding, a wider understanding of their professional identity, perhaps?
Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's something that we initially considered. Although, through our PIAC stakeholders, public health would always say at the end of the year, I can see a difference in the students that have done the community projects and those that we employ as public health nurses. Their thinking is different. They think more strategically. They think outside the box. They come up with creative solutions, and they're not afraid to do that. I think that is something that's really important, Sam, that to be in a creative context, we have to be able to say, well, let's give it a go. And maybe we are in a environment which does not encourage, let's give it a go. And I would say that community development is about, let's test these things out. And let's see if they work. And if they don't, let's learn from it. Well, that's my philosophy, and that's my philosophy of life, always has been. So I feel very comfortable by stretching myself or stretching the students into a context that it is unknown.
The survey that we were talking about is chapter...
Six
in the book. How's the book going, Jean?
Oh, it's going okay, Sam. Taking a bit longer than what we expected, but we got the okay in April that the chief editor of the series, Global Perspectives of Health in Geography, through Springer, all good. Seven chapters, all good. It's the nitty-gritty of the publishing that is holding us slightly back, but we've heard that we will receive everything by the end of October. We have 5 days to go through every single chapter with the lead authors, ensuring that there are no typos or everything that is hunky-dory. And I would say by December, the e-copy, the e-book will be out, and they have promised us by January, February next year, the hard copy will be. And people can pre-order now.
What's it called?
It's called Rural Landscapes of Community Health, The Chase Model in Action.
And it's a very good book.
It's a great book. Sam, you're an editor with me in the book. Just very briefly, the first four chapters are theoretical, and the remaining three chapters take a very futuristic approach to looking and reflecting on community rural health.
The last one particularly so.
The last one particularly so, chapter 7, takes a futuristic approach on reflecting, or in a futuristic perspective, on how does Chase, what does Chase look like in 2033? And we've taken Bishop's Castle as a case study throughout that to give it some substance, from a medieval village in the 15th century to a very modern, contemporary village in 2033.
It's a design fiction based around celebrating Keith's house's 500th birthday.
Yes. He lives in a 15th century old pub. Well, what was the drinking hole for people going through or up and down the hills through Wales and England?
So what was the best bit of your trip?
I think meeting people, old colleagues, at the Royal Geographical Society. It's somewhere I like going. It's a nice place in London. It's the beautiful old building of the RGS. But I met some people that you just start a conversation with. And I'm just going to actually, say Michael Woods, Professor Michael Woods from the University of Aberystwyth. I met him in 2011 at the RGS, at the same table, in the same place where our book was being launched this year in 2023. But I met Michael, I was looking at his book that he just published called Rural, and he went past, and I said to him, from one Welsh person to another, will you sign this book? And he signed it, and I bought it. And I saw him at the conference, and I went up to him. I had the flyer for our book, Chase, and I said to him, Michael, you won't remember me, but... And he tried his best, he's as the gentleman that he is. And I said, look, Michael, I'd just like to give you this flyer. And he said, I picked one up and I'm very interested in your book. And he told me about the work he's doing, about community development in Aberystwyth, And I'm going to continue a conversation with him about health, general practice, in the work that I've done previously. And that was just wonderful. But it was also meeting up with people I've never met before who told me to talk to this person, talk to that person, and that's where I got all this other information, like John Gower, people, filmmakers, who have taken an interest in Holyhead. And I just think the connections are wonderful. And, of course, I am from Holyhead. And I think the privilege of working with Alan and Cole for the next 3 years is just going to make my day.
And make some students' days.
And have made some students' days. It's that giving back, Sam.
So we have some questions to end the show with. We're not going to go through all of them because you've had them before, but we'll go with some of them. What's the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
Becoming a professor. The opportunity that holds. Being creative in... I think, you know, when you put a book together, Sam, and you're 18 authors, there's a trust. There's an affirmation, but there's a trust. And, you know, that keeps coming back to me all the time. That, you know, I come up with lots of ideas, but, you know, people trust me. And, you know, I like that. And I saw Ali Dixon. Remember Professor Ali Dixon in the supermarket? And she said to me, you know, Jean, it's always about being your integrity. And that's affirmation, Sam. And I think in this changing world, we need that. When I've spent, you know, nearly 30 years in New Zealand with a purpose about rural health, which has gone in many different ways, I feel I've done a good job.
So this book's coming out very soon. What's next?
I think... No more books. Not for you. Not yet. I said no more books. I'm a little bit conferenced out. And I think I'd like to spend 2024 really focusing on my time a lot more strategically and what we can get from that, Sam. And I know I work with you very closely on different projects, but what we can do to be a lot more strategic. We've done lots of things. We do a lot of things. And as I said to you earlier on this morning, I'd really like us to host a panel, community development at the next RGS conference in August 2024, which would mean a 1 to 5 hour double session on community development around the world, encouraging those with exceptional aspects to share, and so we can all learn from that. That's my focus for next year.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
I think don't be shy in giving it a go.
Sounds like good advice to me. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you, Sam.
I was left here to die. I was held up for ransom under cold summer skies. I was told not to love him. I was told not to try. I was lonely, the only, till he said he'd be mine. He will leave me for younger. He will leave me to cry. Time.
been listening to Blowing Bubble, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world, brought to you by Otago Polytechnic Te Pūkanga. We are broadcast on Otago Access Radio and streamed in podcast on oar.org.nz. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. This is Jim Wigmore, Written in the Water. I'm Samuel Mann at Otago Polytechnic Te Pūkanga, and I've been joined today by Professor Jean Ross. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.